Morning. Well, I have a question for you to consider as we get started. Just a simple question. You can answer to the person next to you or someone behind you or something. What is the purpose of worship? So that's the question, and you have about 30 seconds. People are kind of moaning. I know it's hard. There may be more than one answer, but go ahead and think. And if you're not a regular churchgoer, it's your first time, you don't really know. I don't know is a perfectly good answer. So take about 30 seconds or a minute, and we'll come back together. All right, now that you've got that figured out, I don't have to preach today. Thank you. You did all the hard work. You did all the heavy lifting, so I really appreciate that. So we've been studying from the book of Amos. This series is called The Heart of God. We're looking at Amos's call, and as I've said multiple times, this is a book we don't really study that much in general. Churches don't look at the prophets all that much, partly, I think, because they really, really challenge us, especially people who consider themselves believers, followers of Christ. These books, the prophets, are really going to be a challenge for us. And you have to know that Amos didn't really get much of a following either. People didn't like him. They told him to leave. And so if I'm making you uncomfortable or if you're upset at the end of my sermon, then I'm just doing what Amos did. So just forward your emails to him, all right? Like you can just let him know why he's bothering you. Because if I'm doing my job right, you should be a little bit challenged by the book of Amos, if not a lot challenged. And as I've said, if you were to look at the life of Jesus, that's what I tell people. If they want to look at what God is like with skin on, look to Jesus. But if you want to see what God's heart is, then look at the prophets. Because the prophets are the way that God calls his people back. And he says, okay, this is how things have gone kind of in the wrong direction. He calls his people back. And don't we all need that from time to time? There's an old preacher story about a guy who's living in Nashville, and he's packing for a trip, and his friend walks into the room to see him packing for this trip. And he says, hey, man, where are you going? And he says, oh, I'm going down to New Orleans for the weekend. And he says, whoa, that's going to be a lot of fun. He says, yep, the women there are pretty good. There's a lot of gambling available, lots of booze. And he's like kind of continuing to pack. And his friend says, well, why are you taking your Bible with you? And he says, well, I might have so much fun down there, I need to stay over for Sunday and go to church, so I need to take my Bible with me. And his friend's just like, what are you talking about? And we know from a story like that, that you can be very religious without being very righteous. And you can go through the right routine or show up at the right place for the right hour and not really be very righteous. And this is what Amos is telling to these people over and over again as you read the book of Amos. He's calling on them to look for the oppressed, look for those who are in great need. He's calling them to remember those who are at the bottom of society. Because the problem is the people during this time in Israel, they had just expanded their borders and money was flowing in like it hadn't since King Solomon's time. And so they're very wealthy, and if you were to ask them, they would have said, God is on our side. And God must be blessing us, right? Because we have all this wealth. God must be on our side. And so the places of worship were very full. They had worship services. They were enthusiastic. They thought that God was on their side. But the problem is religion can easily become man-centered and not God-centered. And that's what has happened to these people. They believe that their worship of God didn't really affect anything in their lives. They had somehow made a disconnect between those two things. And so Amos comes and he challenges them. In Amos chapter 4, verses 4 and 5, he says this, "Go to Bethel and sin, go to Gilgal and sin yet more. And he starts by saying this, and you have to know Bethel was a very sacred place. It was a place in the Old Testament where Abraham had been. It was a place where Jacob had been. At one point, the Ark of the Covenant was there. And then Gilgal was also important because it's where Joshua first camped when he entered into the Promised Land. And remember, at this time, the northern and southern kingdoms are separate. Amos comes from the southern kingdom to talk to the northern kingdom. And the people in the northern kingdom, because they were separate, needed a place to worship because Jerusalem is down in the southern kingdom. And so they set up places to worship in Bethel and Gilgal. So these were places where people who were followers of God would come to worship. Okay, so this isn't talking about like different issues. Sometimes in the Old Testament, prophets are dealing with like that they're worshiping other gods. But in fact, these people were worshiping God. And they're going to places where they thought they were doing things right. And Amos says, go there and sin. And kind of think about the weight, the heaviness that's involved in that. Like, go to worship and sin. I mean, it doesn't really go together, right? He continues, bring your sacrifices every morning, your tithes every 3 years. Amos is tapping into the call. A priest would give a call to worship when people would come to the temple. And so he's kind of echoing, he's mocking a call that a priest might give to the people. Go to this place. A priest would say, come, let us worship God. Bring your offerings. And so Amos is actually mocking this and says, bring your sacrifices every morning, your tithes every 3 years. Burn leavened bread as a thank offering and brag about your freewill offering. Boast about them, you Israelites, for this is what you love to do, declares the Lord. See, these people are going through religious motions. They're bringing the right things. They're showing up at the right place. They're there at the right time. And in fact, they're doing offerings. They're doing free will offerings. They're doing thank offerings. I mean, there's kind of a problem because they're bragging about it with each other. They're at least bringing it, right? It's kind of the equivalent of like if the collection tray passed you and you're like, just FYI, everybody, here is what I'm putting in. Here is my sacrifice for the week. So, I mean, that's what they're doing. They're bragging about their offerings. But one thing that you'll notice in the book of Amos is it never mentions an important offering. There are many different kinds of offerings that are talked about in the Old Testament, but there's one that's not mentioned, and it's not mentioned there. It's a sin offering. Because for these people, they didn't really consider themselves sinners. They didn't really need to like get right with God because they already were. I mean, obviously, because God continues to bless them. So there's no need for a sin offering. And so they're not examining their own brokenness. They're not examining how they're contributing to the brokenness of the world. So instead of coming together and being convicted by the living God, they're just increasing in pride, bragging about what they're offering. They don't really recognize their own issues, how they're part of the brokenness and suffering in the world. They don't really recognize that at all. This kind of gets you to ask a question. Is God central to your church experience? Is like an encounter with the living God central or not? Because you can go for a lot of different reasons. There was a preacher named Henry Beecher in the mid-1800s. Here's a picture of him. Very nice-looking fellow. He was an excellent preacher in New York, and he worked at a church called Plymouth Church in Brooklyn, New York, and it was one of those places that got really famous, and everyone wanted to come hear Henry Beecher speak. But unfortunately, this was kind of the days before the internet and Twitter, so people couldn't really communicate all that well. And there were some Sundays when Henry wouldn't speak and it was someone else. And one time, Thomas, his brother, got up to speak. And as he got up there, he saw many people in the congregation leaving because everyone wanted to see his brother and not Thomas. And I've had that experience. All right, we see it, all right? It hurts. Being honest with you, being very vulnerable, just a couple years ago, I remember there was some people sitting behind Bill and Barbara Rogue, and when I got up to preach, this guy leaned forward and said, "Where's the priest?" And Bill, in about 30 seconds of hushed tones, it's hard to really explain how to answer that question. And so he just kind of said, "Well, we don't really have one. I don't really know exactly what he said." They just got up and left. And I was like, guys, come on, give me a minute at least, right? I mean, at least give me 5 minutes, give me a chance, and you're not doing anything else. Oh, just for a few minutes. So we know what it's like to see people filing up and leaving. I know how that goes. And so Thomas Beecher, because he sees everyone leaving because his brother's not speaking that day, he pauses and he says, all who came to worship Henry Beecher now can withdraw. And everyone else who came to worship God can stay. And I don't know how many people like stopped halfway out or came back in. I don't really know how that went down. But we can come to worship for a lot of different reasons. And it's possible to worship a person or to worship a tradition or to worship a routine and not really God. That's what Amos is critiquing these people of. He's saying you are very religious, but not very righteous. And then there's the passage in the middle of Amos chapter 5, which may be the most difficult passage. If you want to turn to Amos 5, starting in verse 21. This may be one of the toughest verses and one of the ones that we need to think about more than anything. And it happens to be kind of at the center of the book of Amos. And in Hebrew writing, often the main point is kind of in the middle. So this is in the middle of the book of Amos, and it's kind of getting to the heart of what Amos is trying to communicate, this message that he's received from God. This is a message from God, and Amos preaches it to these people. I hate, I despise your religious festivals. Again, just think about the weight here. This is God saying, I hate your worship. I don't like it when you gather to worship me. And just let that sink in for a second. This is God communicating through Amos, telling these people, your assemblies are a stench. It's not a good aroma. It's a bad aroma. Even though you bring me burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. Though you bring choice fellowship offerings, I will have no regard for them. Away with the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the music of your harps. And you want to kind of pause here and go, okay, like, what's the problem, right? If God is communicating, like, I hate your worship. I hate it when you guys gather. I despise it when you get together. You kind of want to go, okay, like, you want to put an alarm around your scripture and just, like, say, okay, this is something we really, really, really need to pay attention to. Because if this is something that God is communicating, God doesn't like it when these people get together and worship, you kind of want to go, okay, well, what's the deal? What's the problem? And then how do we fix it? And then the next verse, which is probably the most famous verse of Amos, verse 24. But let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. You see, the problem for these people is that they had let church become a part of their routine. They'd let it become a part of their like regular part of their lives, but they hadn't really let it transform any other part of their lives. And so why does God hate their worship? Why does God despise their worship? Because their lives and their worship are completely disconnected. And their worship produces no justice. And Amos's picture, the word picture is brilliant here. Let justice roll like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. What a beautiful image. And during that time, some of the other competing religions, there was a Canaanite religion which basically said, as long as you showed up at the right place, as long as you made the right sacrifices, then you could keep the gods happy. As long as you kind of did the right things, then you could keep God happy. But God is saying here, I'm not like that. I'm not like those other gods. You can't come together and just play worship and then go and act like it doesn't matter. You can't just be there for the right time, for the right at the right place, and then let your life be completely disconnected from that. Amos gives this beautiful image, but let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. Water that will restore and heal. A faith community that just goes out and produces water in the world, gives cups of cold water to a world that's thirsty. And what if this is how God judges worship? Like how it looks in your life. Like not what it looks like on Sunday for an hour, but what it looks like on Tuesday and Wednesday. And what if this is God's way of judging our worship? That justice would roll like a river. Jesus kind of picks up on this idea, and he quotes the prophets frequently, but he quotes Hosea often. In Matthew 9, there's one example, Matthew 9, verses 12 and 13. But when Jesus heard this, he said, "It's not those who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners." And this is a quote Jesus is quoting. "I desire mercy, not sacrifice." That's from the book of Hosea. And Jesus quotes that often. And he says this right here to a group of very religious people. And you have to know, they probably would have had large sections of the Old Testament memorized, the people that Jesus is talking to. And so for him to say, "Go and learn what this means," I mean, it's kind of a slam. Like, it's like, you guys, you might have it memorized, but you don't really know what it means. And people would have been shocked by Jesus saying this. They would have been like, "Are you kidding me? Whoa, you don't really want to do that. Don't upset the apple cart too much." But this is what Jesus is consistently saying. "I desire mercy, not sacrifice. Go and learn what this means." And what if our churches were centered around this concept? Francis Chan, in his book Crazy Love, says this way: "We need to stop giving people excuses not to believe in God." You've probably heard the expression, "I believe in God, just not organized religion." I don't think people would say that if the church truly lived like we're called to. Their expression would change to, "I can't deny what the church does, but I don't believe in their God." At least then they'd address their rejection of God rather than use the church as a scapegoat. And what if the book of Amos, Jesus quoting that, what if that's what we're called to be? We don't have to be as focused around just 1 hour of the week, but living a life that's saturated with the grace and mercy of God. It's easy for us to get stuck. It's easy for us to put things in front of the gospel, to make them like the most important thing. It's just easy for churches or really or any organization to start to think about things as like the most important issue. And just a few years ago, we were trying to decide as a church, like, is it okay to have PowerPoint or not? And some people were saying that it was wrong. Some people said that it wasn't right for people to have PowerPoint in church. I know. I know, it's sad, isn't it? Oh, come on. I've got a few more things up there. You can't do that. Okay, good. I mean, we end up with these fights about things, and then like 7 years, I think it was about 7 years ago, we just look back and go, "That's ridiculous. I mean, is it really more scriptural to sing out of a songbook?" And just a few months ago, when Chris was out of town and couldn't heal our sick computer, we sang out of the songbooks, and everyone was upset, right? They're like, "Where's the PowerPoint?" I know, you end up getting used to whatever it is. And we look back and go, "Wow, I can't believe that was even a conversation. I can't believe some people were questioning. I'm sorry, PowerPoint, they has feelings too." But what in like 5 or 10 years from now, we'll look back and say, "I can't believe that was an issue." Like, what were we doing back there? Because that's not central to the mission of the heart of God. You know, what in 10 years are we going to look back and go, "Whoa, I can't believe that was an issue at all." And the biggest thing that I think we need to realize is, how do we even know if we're getting worship right? And we don't. God could be up there and we're singing "Hero Israel" and he's like, "James always leads this song. How many more times has he go through Hero Israel?" That's God. That's not me, James. I'm cool with it. I mean, how do we know if we're like doing worship exactly right? I love this passage in the book of 2 Chronicles that talks about King Hezekiah, who is an amazing king who helped to restore the nation and really turn them back in the direction of God. And for many, many years, it had been forgotten for the Israelite, for the people to practice Passover. I mean, it seems unbelievable, right? And it's unbelievable that you kind of forget it, forgets their tradition and their history. And so King Hezekiah, as he is preparing these people, he's preparing Passover, this feast that they haven't celebrated in a long time. He says this, "May the Lord, who's good, pardon everyone who sets their heart on seeking God, the Lord, the God of their ancestors, even if they're not clean according to the rules of the sanctuary." And the Lord heard Hezekiah and healed the people. And this is Hezekiah, who's this great king, this spiritual leader, this one who does something that I think God would consider so important. He's reinstating Passover in Israel's history. And he says, you know what? I may be a really religious guy. I may kind of have an insight into you, God, but if some people aren't doing it right here, as long as their hearts are pursuing you, then just heal them. And accept it. And God does. I mean, do we have the humility to pray a prayer like this? God, we're not sure if you like Hero Israel. I mean, we're not sure. I mean, do we have the humility to say something like that? Maybe the way that God judges worship is the justice it produces in your life. Maybe God's hope and dream is that your worship would extend into your life, that we would gather together. And this passage is not saying that our Sunday morning gathering is not important, because it is. In fact, it's saying that it's of utmost importance. The book of Amos is saying this is important. And it's important for you to gather together. And Amos uses the image of water, which I think is great. And water kind of separated out on its own, it eventually evaporates. But when we come together, when a group of us comes together as a community, we're reminded of the power of God. We remember God's love. We remind each other in community of who God is. And once again, we're like a stream or a river. And then we get a chance to go together into our world and splash our world with a little bit of justice. To splash our world with a little bit of hope. And maybe that's what God says. Maybe God says, I'm judging your worship by how big your splash zone is. By the ways that you're showing justice and mercy to this world. Erwin McManus says this way, we somehow think that the church is here for us. We forget that we are the church and we are here for the world. As the people of God, we must remember what we're here to do. Yes, we're here to worship God, and worship, the purpose of it is to lift God's name up. And God knows that we need to remember. We need to remember the story. We need to remember all the ways. And so we come together and we remind each other of who God is. And then as the church, we show the world this justice and mercy. We let this mercy and justice flow out of us like a never-failing stream. So what does your worship produce? What is the product of your worship? And again, this kind of scripture really is going to challenge us. It's going to make us consider that. What is the product of your worship? I want to read that scripture over you a couple times again. Let's stand together. Amos 5:24. And I want you, as a challenge this week, to memorize this verse. It's simple, but it is the most important verse in the book of Amos in my mind. But let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. Let me say that one more time. Let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. I'll say that together one more time. Let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. This is the goal of our worship, that we would show the world what God is like, that we would come together, that we would remember who God is, and then we would go out like a river, like a stream, into a world that so desperately needs this kind of hope. We're going to sing a song now that we've already sang called What the Lord Has Done in Me. And one of the things that the people in the book of Amos had wrong was they had gotten wrong the fact that they didn't really need to put an offering for sin. They had neglected the sin offerings. And we, as the people of God, recognize that we are sinners, that we are broken, that we contribute to the brokenness that exists in our world. But I hope that we would recognize what God has done in us so that we could do what God has done in us for others. Let's sing together.